I realize how limited my own thinking has been in this arena when I look back on the skills that I've developed in the last year as an entrepreneur. I've learned other parts of the customer journey, like email marketing in a software program called MailChimp, yep. or graphic design in a program called Canva, or even web development in WordPress. I've always imagined that I needed to hire professionals, or, and sometimes I do, yeah. but like I needed a different skill set. Like my brain wasn't capable of learning
these particular skills.
Yeah. I'm not a web developer. I'm not a graphic designer, and I'm not. But today's tools make it so that if you know how to drag and drop, if you know how to select a template, if you know how to like right click, copy and paste, like you can actually be those things. You can at least know enough to be dangerous.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we're talking about upskilling to earn more and learn more.
Oh, okay. Upskilling.
I know.
That's a weird word.
I know. I wish it was called something less jargony.
Yeah, because I'm kind of old school. I naturally think more so of, Stephen Covey's Sharpening the Saw, or you just call it learning new skills. But,
right.
you know, we got to, these days, you got to find a term, a brand, a trademark.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I guess the word of the moment is upskilling. But I think it's really important because I know a lot of people are looking for pivots mm-hmm. or what I would think so of more like a reset. It's like a career reset. You have an opportunity to redefine who you are and hopefully your earning potential. And so that's why we're talking about upskilling.
Yeah. And you'll probably hear us using upskilling and reskilling interchangeably during the conversation.
Oh my God.
So upskilling is providing skills to grow in your current career. And reskilling involves training for an entirely new job. So that's kind of the pivot that you were talking about. And I think this is important for a couple of reasons. The first one is that a lot of people feel stuck in their jobs that don't necessarily have career paths or lucrative growth opportunities. And the solution to feeling stuck can often feel more daunting than the problem.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people will leap to either needing to go back to school or recommit years of their lives or tens of thousands of dollars in debt. It can feel like you're going backwards when you think about learning to do something different. And I think it's correct to look at it as an investment. But I think the second reason why we're tackling this is because very similar to other aspects of our everyday lives that technology has made easier or more accessible, upskilling or in some cases reskilling is one of those things that is much easier than what you might be imagining.
Yeah.
In fact, we wrote a whole chapter about this in our forthcoming book, Cashing Out, entitled it, Whatever You're Thinking, Think Bigger,
mm-hmm.
because we're talking about the future of work and we point out all the challenges of the labor model as it stands today. Things like the limits of exchanging time for money and the pace of jobs being eliminated as companies invest more in technology. At some point in the chapter, we actually ask the question, what incentive do companies have to slow down the pace of innovation so that we can catch up?
Right.
And the answer to that is none.
None.
These companies have no incentive to slow down. So we have to take charge of the issue before we end up on the wrong side of it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Listen, this is an opportunity for all of us to catch up. And obviously, we're going to get a little specific. So I wanted to go ahead and jump right in. Why are we talking about this? In part, it's because we've actually been spending a lot more time on LinkedIn lately. And when you think about all of the social media platforms that we've been engaging in, both personally and professionally, I think LinkedIn is probably the one that has seen the most interesting transformation
right.
over the last couple of years. It's been really fascinating to watch it grow. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting to watch a lot of people jump into the platform and kind of learn how to use it. It's been amazing to watch other people really leverage it for what the platform was truly designed
mm-hmm.
for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really, really fascinating. And so if you're not on LinkedIn, which I'll be honest, sounds weird to say, but
I still know a lot of people.
I am still
that
meeting a lot of people who are
not on
LinkedIn.
It's the smallest social network, I
correct.
Think. Yeah.
Correct. But it is a professional social network. It is out there. And so I would say do yourself a favor. If you've not done it, explore it, get on there, reskill, upskill, present yourself to the world, and you'd be amazed to see what's happened. But All of that to say, we've been spending a lot of time on LinkedIn lately, and one of the new things that they've added was this tool that basically allows users to identify the specific skills that are needed for higher paying jobs. And that sounds simple, but if you think about what LinkedIn is, then you can understand why they are so well suited to do that. And so it's a social media platform that basically connects employers and employees. And so if you're an employer and you're saying, hey, I've got these jobs available, and you list what those skills are, LinkedIn can say, all right, well, we have a pretty good assessment of what the skills that are in demand are. And on the other side of that coin, they've got millions of people who are employees and prospective employees that are saying, hey, these are my skills,
right?
And so they, more than anyone, I would say, in the world, have a really unique perspective to say, this is what's in demand, this is what people have, this is how that's changed over time.
And so here's how often they get hired.
Exactly.
Here's how often these jobs are
placed. They're getting paid.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
they have 20 years of changing career data all in one platform.
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating. And as a result, you can see why it's so useful. And it really made me think about, I'm going to protect her identity here and be anonymous, but we have a family member that shared with us not too long ago that she was in hundreds of thousands of student loan debt. And we knew she was in debt, but we didn't know it was as much as she expressed. And she was really attributing a lot of it to going to school, getting a very specialized degree, but then being really disappointed by the fact that when she came out, the job market was not nearly as strong as what the school presented it as, right? And I think a lot of people can unfortunately relate to that. So when I think about this particular tool, it's really helpful, right? Not just for people who are in school, but for people who are considering whether or not they should even get a certain type of degree. Like, this is the type of tool that I think can really help you better predict what the marketplace may be for certain skills. And so the tool is called the Future of Skills Data Tool, and it allows you to see how demand for certain skills in a given area may have changed over time. So let's use an example. Let's say you want to be a social media manager and you live in the United States. This is a global tool. You live in the United States. You can basically search that skill. Like, what's the demand for social media managers? What are the skills or sub-skills that are required for a social media manager? How has that changed over the last 5 years? All of that stuff so that you can make a better assessment about whether or not this is something that you want to do. And as you start thinking about the specific skills you want to learn, you can focus on the ones that are in demand. It seems so obvious.
I know.
It feels like I'm saying, you know, if you take a bath, you'll be clean.
Yeah.
And then people will like you. But this is a very, I think it really highlights just how the lack of transparency around these things lead to all of these compounding problems. So I'm really excited about this tool.
Yeah. Because I like to think of resumes as stories. And I think what this tool highlights is an important lesson about how language evolves over time.
Yeah.
There are so many of us who are still telling our career stories with old language.
Right.
Imagine you were watching a movie in the year 2022 and the main character is walking around with a lantern instead of a flashlight,
right,
or using the, you know, the light on the back of the iPhone or whatever cell phone they have. Like, that's how your resume looks when you're still calling roles that you had titles like secretary instead of using administrative assistant, or, you know, you have skills like word processing on there, which at this stage is kind of a given and expected, right? Or this is more relevant. You could be missing out on opportunities because you're not being specific enough. So you might be a photographer by trade, but just adding one descriptor, like calling yourself a lifestyle photographer or a product photographer, could change the nature of the inquiries that you get and could be the thing that reactivates and makes your resume more relevant. I also really like the location aspect. So within the tool, as Julian mentioned, you can search by country. And it's almost a reminder that labor itself is a global commodity. You can sell it anywhere. You can buy it from anywhere. And so you may not realize, if you're a business owner, for example, you may not realize that you can hire a web developer in Portugal who has twice the experience, but it costs you a third of the cost as it would if you were hiring from the U.S. and vice versa.
Yep.
So overall, I just think it's a great research tool, whether you're a job seeker or a business owner, that kind of everybody can benefit from.
Okay, so I really love this example because it kind of highlights you know, several different factors. We spoke about the tool being a global tool. And even when we think about, for those who may not know, we have a video series called Money on the Table, and it's very high-end production. We work with a videographer, actually a cinematographer. He prefers that term. But even that highlights your example of like how one particular word can make the difference between whether or not someone is willing to work with you or willing to pay you the premium that you're asking for. But in this case, we work with him. He's pretty expensive, but he's not as expensive as he could be. And he's very clear about that because he has people that he works with that are overseas. He works with a couple of people that I believe are
on
in
the editing part.
South America, on the editing part. And they don't do all the things that actually bring the story to life, but they certainly create efficiencies for him. And so I think it's just a really great example of just kind of helping to connect, to your point, the labor market around the world, not just for people who are looking for professional services, but people who have something to offer. This allows you to be found by people all around the world. The tool is not perfect, though. I want to say it may actually still be in beta mode, but there are a couple of things that I think, you know, they'll likely improve over time. It's not as granular as you want it to be, right? And so this is a global tool. I want to say they are able to identify the trend in certain skills, like by country. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to say, hey, I'm in Smyrna and I'm in zip code 300, whatever it is, right? And what's the demand for, you know, videographers
near my house?
Near my house, right. Again, even as I think about that, given that so much of this work is done over the internet, that might not even be relevant for you. So if that's what you're thinking is a problem and that you want to skip past this tool, don't think about that. But again, that is an opportunity, I think, for them to get a little bit more specific.
I'm sure they will. Like, in my mind, I see this becoming like the Zillow of skills, right?
Yes.
You can go and kind of Zillow, just like you would Zillow surf, you would skill surf and try to figure out kind of what you need to be working on in order to be a viable candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing I'll say about this before we move on is that I think this is relevant for everyone at every stage of your life. Like, I wish I had something like this when I was in high school.
Oh my gosh.
Just so that I could have a better idea and I wasn't making really crazy assumptions, come to think of it. I was like, oh, well, it must be popular because Oprah's talking about it on TV.
Right.
Therefore, I feel confident going into this field of study. But like boomers, millennials, everyone, like even if we're not looking at it from a generational perspective, I think this type of tool can be really helpful. And obviously, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. All right. So the next insight that I want to double click on is something you already mentioned, which is picking skills that are in demand.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is so important because a lot of us never thought about our careers as something we could and should strategically pick.
Yep.
We either picked the thing we were passionate about, the thing we saw our parents doing, or the thing we went to school for. And the way that we should be thinking about upskilling and reskilling is as an alternative to those methods.
Yep.
And you actually want to pick a skill that is in demand. And in 2022, that skill is digital marketing.
Yep.
So LinkedIn actually says that half of the top 10 jobs posted on LinkedIn are in the digital or media space. And that actually makes a lot of sense. The pandemic accelerated the world's shift to all things virtual, whether it's shopping or meeting. And when you have all of this content online and offerings online, you actually need people to manage it.
Yep.
So I know people hear digital marketing and jump immediately to visions of like ad execs and super creative people that dream up Nike campaigns and Coca-Cola commercials.
Yeah.
That is truly just the tip of the iceberg. That's just the part that the customer sees. And it's actually the last stop for what it needed, what that idea needed to do to become the commercial that you see. Digital marketing is a whole ecosystem that requires search engine optimization, link building, data management, web development, copywriting, a number of skills that don't require you to be the next Spike Lee or Steven Spielberg. You know what I mean? Like, in fact, the roles with the highest growth are media coordinators and media managers, which, again, depending on the company, some smaller companies require you to do a little bit of everything. But typically, these are more back-end roles where you're working on behalf of a client or an agency to ensure that whatever creative they want the customer to see actually gets displayed where they want it to go, right? So it's you taking that picture or that video of Tyrese singing on a bus and making sure that the back end pipes of Yahoo, of CNN, oversimplifying this for the purposes of being of the podcast, but you're making sure that it goes where it's supposed to go.
Yeah, I actually don't think you're oversimplifying it. I mean, I had the privilege of I went to school for marketing. I've worked in marketing for the vast majority of my corporate career. I'm still in marketing. And even when I think about our business, that is the title that I wear predominantly. And I still think, to your point, that there's a huge misconception, and you can blame television and film for why people, when they think about marketing, it's like, oh, well, there's the big fancy meeting and the board and someone's up there pitching the idea. And I was like, yeah, it's, I mean, that happens. That might be like 2 or 3% of what any of the meetings I've ever been to looks like. The rest of it, I really would just describe as just regular work.
Yeah, right? Drag, like, and drop.
They've
email,
got files.
Customer support.
They have communications teams. We have like all of the same things that other people or other departments have. So if you're one of those people that feel like, oh, well, I didn't go to school for marketing, or I'm not creative, like, get over that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the jobs that are in demand, and you should feel empowered to go for them. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about, you know, how you would translate your particular skills and whether or not they were considered transferable or not. But that's something that I think people more often than not tend to get confused.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of digital marketing skills, though, even if we're not talking about just trying to apply for particular jobs, I actually think digital marketing skills are, again, they're like general life skills.
Oh, it's like a life skill.
At
oh,
this
I completely
point.
Agree.
Like, you absolutely have to understand these things. And so I'll just give you a couple of examples. But the first one is this personal branding, right? Mm-hmm. If we're talking about LinkedIn, that's really what that platform allows you as an employee or as a prospective employee to do, is to say, hey, this is who I am. This is what makes me great. These are my accomplishments. And so it's there. That requires a certain level of digital marketing savvy. You spoke about resumes, but whether we're talking about other social media profiles, like, it's very important. You can even think about being a speaker, right? Mm-hmm. You can be the most compelling speaker in the world, but then there's that other person who was speaking, but they just had some really great, compelling visuals that help take their ability to tell a story and just capture an audience's attention to the next level. That's a digital marketing skill, right?
Yeah.
These are really important. Even when I think about presentations, there are tools that I use now that I just wish I had access to when I was working my corporate job, because presentation skills is, gosh, we used to make so many presentations.
Yeah.
But I wish I had some of those skills that I've developed now that are a result of my own sort of self-taught digital marketing skills. So all of that to say, digital marketing is where it's at. It's not specific to a particular department or discipline. It's something that impacts everyone, which reminds me of an old saying that a mentor used to say to me, and he basically said, nothing happens until somebody sells something in business. And basically, there's only two departments. He was a little cocky. He was like, there are only two departments. There's sales, and then there's the people that support sales. And it was very arrogant, very arrogant. But that's business, right? Businesses are in place to sell products and services. There's a team that sells things, and then there are all of the support organizations.
Yeah, to make sure they have something to sell.
Marketing supports that. Operations supports that. They're making the thing. The legal team, all of those different teams are supporting the function of selling something. So he's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The tone was a little off, but I understand exactly what he was saying. And so to that point, marketing, I would also say that all of those support organizations are in some shape or form a marketing organization, right?
Yeah.
Your operations team, you may not think of yourself as marketing, but the way that you're making whatever it is that you're making has an impact on how the brand is perceived and, as a result, how the brand is sold. And so everyone is kind of in sales, but I would also say everyone's kind of in marketing as well.
Yeah. I mean, I realize how limited my own thinking has been in this arena when I look back on the skills that I've developed in the last year as an entrepreneur. I've learned other parts of the customer journey, like email marketing in a software program called MailChimp, or graphic design in a program called Canva, or even web development in WordPress. I've always imagined that I needed to hire professionals, and sometimes I do, but like, I needed a different skill set. Like, my brain wasn't capable of learning these particular skills.
Yeah,
I'm not a web developer. I'm not a graphic designer, and I'm not. But today's tools make it so that if you know how to drag and drop, if you know how to select a template, if you know how to, like, right click, copy and paste. Like, you can actually be those things. You can at least know enough to be dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say that same thing goes applies. I'm sorry. Yeah, and I would say the same rules apply for tech. We talk a lot about tech jobs, and I think people say, oh, because I didn't go to school for computer engineering, I can't work in tech. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, no, a lot of the tech today, to your point, is not that different than Microsoft Office. You just need to know what it's going to do, but you don't need to write code.
Right.
That's what they show you on television and film.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's a really interesting time. I will also add, when it comes to digital marketing skills, like it's one of those things that's so ubiquitous. I'm reminded of a friend of mine, a former work colleague who was on our marketing team, but she was also a part-time photographer. And I think marketing is one of those things that also allows you to differentiate yourself and save your team or your organization money. And so she worked on our team. We would, you know, run and lead campaigns, but if we needed a photographer and we couldn't find someone pretty quickly, we would actually tap her and say, hey, can mm-hmm. you bring your camera? Hey, can you make this happen? And she would do that and actually contribute to the work that we were doing. And in some cases, she would even be paid for shooting or recording some of the team events that we would do, because it's only fair. We would typically pay someone to do that.
There are some companies that encourage that.
That encourage you to do that. They, in fact, search within before they charge.
There are a lot of companies who don't. So if your company doesn't, don't feel some kind of way. But there are a lot that encourage that. So having a skill that can be utilized in the organization can be your own little entrepreneurial side hustle.
Absolutely. So if you're out there and you're thinking about these skills and you're only thinking of it in terms of being an event or a baby photographer, that's one part of it. And again, I'm being specific to photography, but I'm just saying there are so many layers and aspects to marketing and digital marketing where you may have an opportunity to contribute or even upskill and add even more value that would ultimately lead you to earning more money.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with the last portion of the podcast. Okay, so the last thing we want to talk about are some of the new tools and platforms beyond LinkedIn that are being built right now to support and train tomorrow's labor market. So I actually found an article in Crunchbase called Great Resignation Drives Billions in VC, which stands for Venture Capital, Dollars to Upskilling Startups. It's a long title, but shout out to the SEO specialist who came up with all of the buzzwords. But I think the reason this article is important, the reason it stuck with me, is because venture capitalists typically only invest in problems that are huge, right? Because that's where the scale is. That's how they make 100 times their initial investment. So the fact that there's a boom in investments to companies who are solving for reskilling workers is indicative of how large this opportunity is.
It's a huge indicator.
Yeah. Since last year, since 2021, investors have poured more than $2.1 billion, with a B, into an assortment of companies in the skilling space. This is according to Crunchbase data. And the even better news is that this is one of the few areas, and this is kind of what happens when you have venture capital support, this is one of the few areas where the incentives are aligned between employer and employee.
Yeah.
Which means they're willing to pay. Employers can easily see the value and expect a return on investment. And with the support of venture capitalists who have built other successful platforms, you're now seeing companies actually pay for the skilling of their workplace. So one of the platforms that focuses on reskilling is a company called Guild. And it already has clients like Target and Chipotle. And what Guild does is they create these partnerships with universities or other learning providers, and the cost for the employer, they bill directly to Target and Chipotle. The cost for the employer is around $3,000 to $6,000 annually for a full slate of courses for their employees. Again, all designed for working adults. They're not overcomplicating this. They're not replicating what colleges are doing with digital learning. This is specific to working adults. So that's one model where your company's willing to pay for it. Like, check, check. But even if your employer won't fund this, you know, ongoing education, there are also really affordable options for people who want to self-fund. Yep. So there's membership models like LinkedIn Learning, where it's around, I think it's $30 a month. There's probably a premium that's $50 a month. And you get unlimited access to courses. With LinkedIn Learning, you actually get like a badge on your LinkedIn profile every time you complete something, which sends a signal to recruiters and other people in the space.
Yeah.
But there are companies, if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, like Skillshare, Udemy, Coursera, those are all really great alternatives that focus on similar programs and structure to learning.
Yeah, I am all for this because I think it's a much needed departure from like how this has been done in the past. To your point, when you think about venture capital investing in it, like I think they are looking at the horrors of what we've allowed to happen over the last 20 years, which has really contributed
price
to the student loan debt crisis, right? And so we've, and by we, I mean the country, have allowed, you know, these large and small and independent, private, some are online only, like charge basically whatever they want for these skills and for certifications and all of these things. And now people are sort of stuck carrying the bill and there's no one that's actually willing to employ them for that. And so what this is really doing is undercutting that and say, hey, you know, one, we don't have to spend nearly as much money. And two, you don't have to buy the entire buffet, right? You know, I'm going to use a food reference here, but like we've all been there where it's like, I'm going to go get this degree and, you know, you really only want to take these 3 to 4 classes, but you can't because you've got to take all of these other prerequisites. And even if you already know this stuff or you've got to take English again and
It's a credit system. It's not even based on competencies.
Correct.
It's like, well, you got to have 100 credits to get a degree with my brand, my university brand on it.
When I went to culinary school, this is the late 90s, I remember having to take an art class, like an art history class. And I was like, why am I taking this art history class? And I mean, I just remember sitting there like in a chef uniform thinking like, this doesn't make any sense. Like I'd much rather, and quite honestly, be able to take all of the other culinary classes because I couldn't even take all of the classes that were available. And so I think this is sort of a continuation. So this is sort of a break from that old model where we're simply saying, just give people what they want, give them what they need, and charge them appropriately for it. Obviously, there's still going to be some margin built up into it. But I think it's important for a variety of reasons. One, and we've already touched on it, this new approach is so much less expensive than getting a degree. You literally just said $30 a month. It's a subscription model. You can cancel whenever you want. Like it's not nearly as complicated as it used to be. So again, if you're a little older and you're still sort of holding on to how things used to be, it's not like that anymore. LinkedIn Learning, Skillshare, Udemy, all of these other platforms are ready and able to support your very specific needs without charging you an arm and a leg. Secondly, it's not nearly as time consuming as it used to be. It's likely 100% remote, right? So you don't have to worry about going in or taking the train or a bus or having to get off work. Like obviously there are going to be circumstances where you do need to be present for something, but it's not nearly as clunky and rigid as it used to be. And you used the word, I think, entrepreneurial earlier, which I absolutely love because I think that's the other benefit here is that the perks of this approach of learning online and upskilling in this a la carte kind of fashion has like a triple effect. One, it allows you to develop a very specific skill set that employers may be looking for. Two, using the example that I said about my friend who was a photographer part-time but had the ability to contribute to work, it gives you this added layer of entrepreneurial opportunities. And then on top of all of that, you can also decide to sell those goods or services as an entrepreneur, right? So you can do it like
triple
it's just a triple dip. And it's, you know, it's not going to cost you at all. And most people, I don't think, are accustomed to that. It's like, I learn a skill and I find one employer who's able to compensate me for that skill. And in this world,
loyal to them.
And I'm loyal to them, right? But in this case, it's like I can develop a skill or a new skill or gain a certification. I can find other ways within that same company that I can monetize that skill. I can go outside of it and earn more money, or I can just find a new job because I've learned this new skill. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I think when I think about like who needs to hear this message today, it's hard for me to pick a specific person, but I'm in my mind, I'm talking to the person, to anyone out there who feels stuck.
Yeah.
We meet and talk to a lot of people whose money issues can just be boiled down to simply not having enough of it, right? Like, it's not an intelligence thing. It's not a literacy thing. It's not an effort thing or a moral failing. It's simply a math problem. And yet, when we talk about how to solve for it, we're constantly talking around whatever job they have. That's the thing that can't change. So instead, we want to focus on hacks and frugality and cutting back to the point of bare bones or misery in some cases. Mm-hmm. But all of these platforms and improvements for adult learners are actually inviting you to revisit your assumptions around which variables in your life you can adjust to solve your money problems.
Yep.
I think that's incredibly empowering, and not in the fluffy way. It's truly an open invitation to say, what if you did something that paid you twice as much money for a living? What problems would that solve in your life?
Yeah. I'll give you a very specific example, because I thought you were going to go somewhere else, because I know we've spoken a lot and heard from a lot of teachers and low-wage workers and, mm-hmm. you know, counselors.
Hospitality workers. Yeah.
But I would use even myself as another example of why this can particularly be skillful. I went to school for marketing, got an MBA in marketing, worked in corporate, six-figure jobs, doing well in marketing. But it wasn't until I actually decided to commit to learning video production, which is a specific skill that is used in marketing functions more often than not, that I was then able to upskill, create lanes where I can now earn supplemental income for thousands of dollars, all because of that one particular skill, right? So now it's supplementary to all of the experience that I already have. And so even if you are that well-paid worker, and I'm talking, you know exactly who you are, you're doing well, you feel like, nah, I'm good, I don't need to upskill, I'm just going to keep on coasting. I'm telling you right now, there might be a specific skill, and it might be in that world of digital marketing where it's like, if you learned or were able to supplement that with social media advertising or video production, you would be able to earn 2 to 3 times more.
Yep.
And you would be shocked by just how quickly and easily, because the skills are in demand, and you would have all of these other skills to supplement it. So I think it's relevant for everyone, given the moment that we're in, and certainly given from all aspects in terms of debt, wealth building, you name it. So really excited about this.
Oh, my final thought.
Oh, did I? Yeah.
Well, now we'll say it anyway. We'll skip to the final thoughts because that was kind of it.
Oh, well, then that was my final thought. No, go ahead.
So my final thought is that career choice has always been the main character in a lot of personal finance stories. Mm. So don't be afraid to revisit the script. We have to be thinking of our careers within the larger context of what our country and the economy are experiencing. And upskilling or reskilling is going to be necessary to remain relevant in the job market for many, many industries. There are a few of you that are already in the industries that will provide the future of work, but the likelihood that the jobs your children will work exist today is slim to none. A lot of our kids are going to be working in jobs that don't exist today because they haven't had to. And you're already seeing it now, right? Like when you walk in grocery stores or restaurants, you see the self-checkout. You see how you become the cashier because they've found a new way to ensure that you get your goods. So it's just going to continue. And I can't, going back to Julian's point, even if you are well compensated and feel like you're at the forefront of whatever industry you're in, it's a space that you want to be paying attention to ensure that you stay there.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to switch up my final thought as well. And it's to say that the future of work is actually already here.
Right.
And it's actually been here for about the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you're hearing that term and you are still thinking that you're going to squeeze this last bit of juice out of your career and things are going well, if you're able to do that, congratulations. If you're not, you're going to be kicking yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage you to actually reframe and redefine what the future of work means. I know that's a buzzword right now, but I'm telling you, it's actually we're already 5 years in to the future of work. And so don't wait until the last second to start thinking about these things differently. Have the courage, have the confidence to learn something new and just see what happens. And I think given what we already know, given what we've experienced, I think that could really give people the turbo boost or the reset that they're looking for.
Amen. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular Podcast presented by Success. As we continue to reskill into podcasters, your ratings and reviews help this show to get discovered by the people who need it. So if you like what you heard, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. We will see you. I don't know why I always say we will see you next week. I feel like I'm looking at y'all. You will hear us next week. Thanks for listening.
Peace.